A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You see hundreds of them every day and never think about them. Until you buy one on Amazon for $10. Daniel's been collecting road signs, apparently. He picked up a few during a trip to the US, including an infectious waste sign he thought would amuse the Mayan laws. No reaction yet. He's not sure if the sign wasn't clear enough or if they're just wondering how he got there. But the actual questions he sent us are bigger than his shopping habits. He wants to know two things. First, the cost. What do governments actually spend on all this metal and reflective material? Drive 5 minutes, count the signs, and you'd rack up a substantial estimate fast. Second, who designs this visual language we all take for granted? At some point, somebody decided the US. Stop sign is a 12-inch hexagon. Well, octagon, with white letters on red reflective. Who makes that call, and how often does it get updated?
Octagon. Daniel said hexagon in the prompt, but it's an octagon. And he's right that it's globally iconic. It might be the single most recognized shape in the world, but the people who decided it was going to be eight-sided and red? That's a surprisingly small group, and the story involves a treaty the US never signed.
So let's break this into two questions that sound related but actually lead to very different answers. The money question takes you to state DOT procurement offices and federal highway funding formulas. The design question takes you to a committee room in Washington and a convention center in Geneva.
And the scale of this thing is staggering. The US alone has an estimated 20 million plus traffic signs. That's not counting street name signs, parking signs, or the little no soliciting stickers on convenience store doors. We're talking about a massive, invisible industry that most people never notice exists.
20 million. And every single one of them had to be manufactured, shipped, installed, and eventually replaced.
And the replacement cycle is the part that surprised me when I started digging into this. It's not like you put up a sign and it's good for 50 years. The reflective sheeting degrades. The MUTCD, that's the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices, which we'll get to, mandates minimum retroreflectivity levels. So there are crews driving around at night with retroreflectometers, measuring how much light bounces back from every sign, and anything below the threshold gets replaced.
There are people whose job is to drive around at night pointing a retroreflectometer at stop signs.
It's a real instrument, costs about $15,000. And it's how they catch the signs that look fine during the day but turn invisible at night. That's the hidden cost driver in all of this, the reflective sheeting.
Let's start with the easy one then. The money. How much does a sign actually cost? And why does a $10 Amazon sign not count?
A standard 30 by 30 inch regulatory sign, like a speed limit sign, costs roughly $100 to $200 just to manufacture. That's the aluminum blank, the reflective sheeting, and the printed legend. And that's before it ever leaves the factory.
What's the aluminum blank? Just a flat sheet?
It's a specific alloy, usually 5052 aluminum, about 80 thousandths of an inch thick. It has to be stiff enough not to bend in high wind, but light enough to mount on a post. And the edges are hemmed, folded back, so you don't have a sharp edge facing traffic. That hemming alone adds maybe $15 to the manufacturing cost.
So, $100 to $200 for the sign itself, then installation.
Installation adds another $100 to $300 per sign. You've got the U-channel post. That's the galvanized steel post with the channel that the sign bolts into, the breakaway base, the concrete footing, and the labor. A single stop sign, fully installed, typically runs $300 to $500.
And a typical intersection has, what, four stop signs, plus street name signs. Maybe a speed limit sign.
That intersection could easily be $2,000 to $3,000 just in signage. And that's a simple four-way stop. A complex intersection with advanced warning signs, pedestrian crossing signs, lane designation signs, you're looking at five figures.
Which is why state DOT budgets for signs run into the tens of millions. Caltrans, California's DOT, their traffic sign budget for the 2023-24 fiscal year was about $47
million. $47 million. And that's just one state. California's big, but multiply that across 50 states, and you're looking at a national expenditure that's easily in the billions annually when you include local municipalities.
So the reflective sheeting is the part that actually drives the replacement cycle.
Right. There are different grades. Type 1, engineering grade, is the cheapest. It's basically glass beads embedded in a plastic film. It reflects about 30% of headlight light back toward the driver. That's fine for low-speed residential streets. But on highways, they use Type XI's high-intensity prismatic. That's microprismatic retroreflective film, usually made by 3M or Avery Dennison. It's basically millions of tiny cube corner prisms molded into the film, and it returns about 80% of the light.
Cube corner prisms.
Imagine a cube with one corner cut off, and the inside surfaces are mirrors. Light goes in, bounces off three surfaces, and comes back out exactly parallel to where it entered. That's what's happening inside the reflective sheeting on a highway sign. It's sophisticated optical engineering, and it costs 3 to 5 times more than Type 1.
How long does it last?
10 to 12 years before the retroreflectivity drops below the MUTCD minimums. Then the sign gets replaced, even if the aluminum is still perfectly fine. The sheeting degrades from UV exposure, thermal cycling, moisture ingress. The prisms get hazy, and at that point the sign is legally non-compliant.
So Daniel's $10 Amazon sign
is a novelty item. It's printed on thin gauge aluminum, maybe 20 thousandths of an inch, with non-reflective ink, or at best a cheap glass bead coating that'll last 2 years in direct sunlight. It doesn't meet ASTM D4956, which is the standard for retroreflective sheeting. It's not MUTCD compliant. You couldn't install it on a public road even if you wanted to.
But you can put it on your fence to confuse the Mayan laws.
You can, and apparently Daniel did. But the real ones cost 20 times more because they're engineered products, not decorations. They have to survive a 100-mile-per-hour wind load, resist corrosion for a decade, and reflect headlights at a specific minimum brightness from a specific angle. Every single one of those requirements adds cost.
Who pays for the real ones? Is this federal money, state money, local?
It's a mix. The Highway Trust Fund, which is fed by the federal gas tax, covers a portion of highway signage through federal aid highway programs, but most of the money is state and local. The MUTCD is adopted by all 50 states, so the design standards are uniform nationwide, but procurement is completely decentralized. Every county, every city, every town buys its own signs from its own vendors.
Which sounds wildly inefficient.
It is, in some ways. But it also means the sign shop in rural Ohio can bid on county contracts without competing against a national conglomerate. And the MUTCD standards ensure that the sign you buy from that shop meets the same reflectivity and durability requirements as one from a giant manufacturer. The standard is the equalizer.
So the economics are surprisingly complex. But the second question, who designs these things, is even weirder, because the answer involves a treaty from 1968 that the United States never signed.
Let's start with the U.S. system, because that's what Daniel's asking about, the stop sign specifically. The document that governs every traffic sign, signal, and pavement marking on American roads is the MUTCD, first published in 1935 by the American Association of State Highway Officials. That's now AASH2. It's maintained by the Federal Highway Administration, and it's the law of the land for traffic control devices.
And the stop sign specifically. It wasn't always a red octagon.
No, and this is where it gets interesting. The first stop sign, in Detroit in 1915, was a white square with black text, just the word STOP. In 1924, they changed it to a yellow circle. Which seems insane now, but at the time yellow was the standard warning color and red wasn't used, because there was no red reflective material that wouldn't fade.
A yellow circle.
A yellow circle with black letters. It stayed that way until 1954. The change to the red octagon was driven by two things, the development of fade-resistant red reflective materials and a push toward international standardization. The octagon shape was chosen specifically, so that even if the sign was covered in snow or the paint was worn off, you'd still recognize it by shape alone. No other sign is octagonal.
So the shape itself is the message.
And that's a deliberate design principle in the MUTCD. Regulatory signs have specific shapes. Stop is the only octagon. Yield is the only downward-pointing triangle. Railroad crossing is the only circle. The idea is redundancy, color, shape, and text all convey the same instruction, so if one fails, the others still work.
Who actually sits down and decides that, though? Who's in the room?
The FHWA's Office of Transportation Operations runs the process, but the actual design work is done by the National Committee on Uniform Traffic Control Devices, the NCUTCD. It's a volunteer body of traffic engineers, academics, state DOT officials, and industry representatives. They meet twice a year, in January and June, and they propose changes to the MUTCD through a formal process that includes research, field testing, and public comment.
Volunteer traffic engineers meeting twice a year in a conference room somewhere.
That's who designed the visual language you see every time you drive. A committee. And they take years to make even small changes. A new symbol, say a sign for electric vehicle charging stations, can take 5 to 7 years from proposal to adoption. They have to do legibility studies with human subjects, crash testing for breakaway posts, reflectivity testing, and then the FHWA has to publish proposed rulemaking in the Federal Register and accept public comment.
5 to 7 years for one new sign.
And that's by design. The system is conservative because the cost of getting it wrong is measured in lives. If you put up a sign that drivers don't understand or that they misread at 60 miles per hour, people die. So every change is tested to exhaustion.
The MUTCD itself. How often does a new edition come out?
Roughly every 2 to 4 years. The current edition is the 11th, published in 2023. The 12th edition is already in development. But most of those updates are tweaks. Adjusting minimum sizes. Adding new signs for new situations like EV charging or autonomous vehicle lanes, clarifying language. Major visual changes are rare. The last big one was the font change.
Right. The Highway Gothic to Clearview and back again.
That saga is a perfect example of how this system works. Highway Gothic, officially the FHWA series fonts, was the standard since the 1940s. In the 1990s, researchers found that older drivers had trouble reading it at night because the letters blurred together from halation, the spreading of light in the retroreflective sheeting. So a team developed Clearview, a new typeface with more open letter forms and larger interior spaces. The FHWA granted interim approval in 2004, and it was adopted into the 2009 MUTCD.
And then they switched back.
In 2016, the FHWA revoked the interim approval. New research suggested that Clearview's advantages were smaller than originally claimed, and that the font didn't perform better enough to justify the cost of replacing every highway sign in the country. So the 11th edition of the MUTCD defaults back to Highway Gothic. Those states that already installed Clearview signs can keep them until they wear out.
So, a font war, fought over decades, with human legibility studies and cost-benefit analyses and Federal Register notices.
And that's just the letters. The colors are specified to the Pantone number. Stop sign, red, is Pantone 86. The exact dimensions of every sign are in a companion document called Standard Highway Signs, which runs to over 600 pages. It specifies the radius of every corner, the stroke width of every letter, the spacing between words. If you manufactured a stop sign with the wrong shade of red, it'd be legally non-compliant.
So, that's the U.S. system. Daniel also mentioned this being a global syntax. What's happening everywhere else?
That's where the Vienna Convention comes in. The Convention on Road Signs and Signals was signed in 1968 under the auspices of the United Nations, and it governs sign design for over 70 signatory countries, most of Europe, much of Asia, Africa, and South America. It specifies three main categories. Danger warning signs are triangular with a red border, regulatory signs are circular, and informational signs are rectangular.
And the U.S. never signed it.
The U.S. attended the conference but never ratified the convention. Which is why American warning signs are diamond-shaped and yellow, while European warning signs are triangular with a red border. Same message. Curve ahead, pedestrian crossing, completely different visual grammar.
So there are effectively two global systems.
two major ones, plus countries that mix and match. Canada uses a system closer to the US MUTCD. Australia uses a modified version of the Vienna system. Japan has its own variant. But the Vienna Convention is the closest thing to an international standard, and it's amended even more slowly than the MUTCD. The last major revision was in 2006, which added new symbols for tunnels and trams.
19 years since the last major update to the international standard for road signs.
And that update process is even more bureaucratic than the MUTCD. Amendments to the Vienna Convention require a two-thirds majority vote of the contracting parties, and then each country has to ratify the amendment through its own legislative process. It's glacial.
The global syntax Daniel's talking about, it exists, but it's not really global, and it barely changes.
Which raises an interesting question. The MUTCD is already grappling with what happens when cars read signs digitally instead of visually. Connected vehicle technology means your car can receive speed limit information, stop sign locations, curve warnings directly over a wireless signal. The sign is still there for human drivers, but the car doesn't need it.
At some point, if autonomous vehicles become dominant, the physical sign becomes redundant.
The FHWA is already working on this. The 12th edition of the MUTCD is expected to include provisions for connected vehicle, signage, digital infrastructure that communicates with cars. But they're not going to tear down 20 million signs overnight. The physical sign will be with us for decades, partly because of legacy vehicles, partly because of redundancy. You want the stop sign even if the wireless signal fails.
The system is conservative by design, and now it has to figure out how to be conservative about a digital transition that might make it obsolete.
That's the tension that runs through all of this. The MUTCD and the Vienna Convention exist because standardization saves lives. A driver from California should be able to navigate Maine without learning a new visual language. A truck driver crossing from France into Germany should see the same warning triangle and know what it means. That uniformity is one of the great achievements of 20th century infrastructure.
But it also means the system resists change, even when change might be better.
Right. And the Clearview Font saga is the perfect example. They spent 20 years arguing about whether a slightly different typeface was worth the cost, and in the end they went back to the old one. Reasonable people can disagree about whether that was the right call, but the fact that it took 20 years to resolve is the system working as designed.
The stop sign itself, the red octagon, that's a 70-year-old design at this point.
71 years. And it's probably not changing in our lifetimes. It's too well understood, too deeply embedded. You could argue that a different shape or color might be marginally better in some edge case, but the cost of retraining every driver on the planet outweighs any possible benefit.
Daniel's $10 Amazon sign is a novelty item, but it's a novelty item that's a copy of a 70-year-old design produced by a volunteer committee, manufactured to a 600-page specification, installed on a post engineered to break at exactly the right speed, and paid for by a mix of federal gas tax money and local procurement budgets.
Replaced every 10 to 12 years when the retroreflectivity drops below a legally mandated threshold, as measured by a $15,000 instrument driven around at night by a person whose job title is probably something like sign reflectivity technician.
I love that that job exists.
It's a real job. And it matters. A sign that doesn't reflect at night might as well not be there.
But all of this assumes the sign is just a flat piece of metal on a post.
The post is the part that actually saves lives.
Go on.
The breakaway base. It's a cast aluminum coupling at the bottom of the post, designed to shear off clean when a car hits it. The MUTCD spec says it has to hold the sign in a 90-mile-an-hour wind, but break under the impact of a 2,000-pound vehicle at 30 miles per hour. Two completely opposite requirements, same piece of metal.
The engineering on that's impressive. It's not just a weak point, it's a calibrated weak point. The shear strength is specified to within a pretty narrow range.
I installed these for 2 summers. Worked for a company called Signs of the Times in rural Ohio. County contracts, mostly. My boss had a copy of the MUTCD in the truck, dog-eared, covered in coffee stains. He'd yell at me if I set a post at the wrong height, 42 inches from the ground to the bottom of the sign for a stop sign, not 41, not 43.
What happens if it's wrong?
He made me redo one. I'd put in a post with the wrong shear rating. It was rated for a smaller sign, lighter wind load. Storm came through, post snapped, sign ended up in a cornfield. He said if a car had hit it instead of the wind, the post wouldn't have broken at all. Driver would have taken the full impact. He made me dig out the concrete footing and start over.
The shear rating is specific to the sign size and the expected wind load for the region.
Every sign has a specified base. The catalog lists them by part number. You look up the sign, it tells you which base to use. Get it wrong, and you've created a hazard. A post that doesn't break turns a sign into a spear.
A spear?
I've seen a car hit a sign at 50 miles an hour. The post sheared at the base exactly the way it's supposed to. Sign flew about 30 feet. The car barely slowed down. Driver walked away with a dented bumper. That's a $50 piece of cast aluminum that saved someone's life, and nobody ever thinks about it.
The breakaway base was actually one of the major safety innovations of the 1970s. Before that, signposts were just buried in the ground or set in concrete with no shear point. Cars were getting impaled.
My boss had pictures. He'd been doing it since the 60s. He kept a folder of crash photos in the truck to show new guys why the base mattered. I still think about some of those photos.
The post is the part you don't see because it's behind the sign or buried in the ground, and it's the most engineered component in the whole assembly.
The sign gets all the attention. The design, the color, the font. The post is just a post, but the post is what decides whether you walk away.
The MUTCD specifies everything about it. The bolt pattern, the slip base design, the maximum stub height after breakaway. There's a whole section on supports that runs dozens of pages.
I still have my old copy of the MUTCD. The one from the truck. My boss gave it to me when I left for college. It's the 1988 edition. Half the signs in it are obsolete, but the breakaway specs haven't changed much. The physics don't change.
The physics don't change.
Wind load and impact force. Same equations.
The next time you drive past a stop sign, you know, it's a 70-year-old design. It costs somewhere around $350 to install. It was designed by a volunteer committee in Washington, and it's held up by a post engineered to break at exactly the right speed. That's a lot of invisible work for something you barely notice.
The open question, though, and this is where the whole system gets interesting, is what happens when the car doesn't need the sign anymore? The MUTCD is already working on connected vehicle infrastructure. Your car gets the stop sign location over a wireless signal. The physical sign is still there as a backup, but at some point, the backup becomes the primary system for legacy vehicles only.
Then you have to ask, how long do you maintain 20 million signs for a shrinking population of human drivers? At what point does the cost-benefit flip?
The system that was designed to be conservative and slow-changing now has to figure out how to manage a transition that might make it obsolete. And it has to do it without creating a safety gap during the decades when both systems have to work.
That's the tension. And it's the same tension in the Vienna Convention countries. Nobody wants to be the first to start removing signs, because the liability, if something goes wrong, is enormous.
If you take one thing from this, it's that the stop sign you drove past this morning isn't a simple object. It's a 70-year-old design, manufactured to a 600-page specification, installed on a post calibrated to save your life, and paid for through a funding formula that goes back to the gas tax. Every single detail was argued over by a committee.
The fact that you never think about any of it's proof that the system works. The best infrastructure is invisible.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping us on the rails and for the breakaway post education.
If you have a weird prompt about signs or infrastructure or anything else you've been wondering about, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We might just build an episode around it.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.